Blog Talk Radio.
President and Robert Frost, a union member at a local 304 branch, Columbus, Ohio. Hey, we sit down and we try to educate the members and any federal employees concerned on their rights should they get injured. Stand by, we've got a 30-minute podcast for you tonight. Hopefully, we will share information with you that will be of value to you. Let's stand by for the show. Hey, good evening. Good evening, everyone. And as I said in the opening, it's Tuesday night. It's 7:30, and it's time to listen and speak with Ken Hodge and Robert Frost as we continue to renew our commitment to ensuring federal. And the podcast is a federal podcast, but my interest is 99.8% with postal employees, and 90% of that is mail handlers. And I break it down like that because my partner, Robert Frost, it doesn't matter if you are a mail handler, letter carrier, clerk, any type of federal employee. If you contact Rob, he's going to make sure you get good information. And with his meticulous attention to detail, he's going to make sure that your forms get processed and you get the benefit of injury compensation that you deserve. Hey, good evening, Rob. How are you doing on Christmas Day?
I'm doing well, Kenny. How are you?
Oh, I'm great. I'm always excited about sharing information. And I want to tell my podcast audience, I do thank Rob for jumping on the mic with me tonight. Again, we understand it's Christmas, but we understand information still should be put out, and it should be put out continuously. Hey, tonight we're going to take a little interesting turn on advising you with injury compensation. Because what I did was I went inside the ELM, which is the labor relations manual that deals with postal employees. And I know from some of the emails I get or some of the text messages I get, there are federal employees, there are postal employees being injured at work, and the agency is not living up to the FICA laws that govern how they deal with these type of traumatic or occupational illnesses. So what I've done is I'm going to start with the podcast off reading out of the ELM, and I'm going to chapter eight. And again, please, if you get an opportunity, download the ELM. It's on the web, and read this, because let me tell you something. When you hear the old adage that says knowledge is power, nothing could be more true. Nothing could be truer when you're dealing with the U.S. Postal Service, because although they have very educated, and I'm sorry if anybody gets mad at that, they have extremely educated upper managers. But when it comes to reading rules and regulations that govern our day-to-day work life, they seem not to take that job very seriously. So I'm coming right out of Chapter 8, and Chapter 8 in the ELM deals with occupational safety, health, and environment, OSHA. A lot of OSHA regulations, And the reason I want to start here, because I want you to understand something. In article, excuse me if I keep saying article when I'm talking about the Elm, I'm talking chapter. Chapter 8, the authority. The Postal Service is subject to public law number 91-596, the Occupational Safety and Health, OSHA, Act of 1970. Pursuant to the Postal Employees Safety Enhancement Act of 1998, the OSHA Act provides for citations, penalties, and criminal referrals for those employers who fail to comply. The Occupational Safety and Health Administration, OSHA, is responsible for promulgating and enforcing standards and regulations under the OSHA Act. Under the OSH Act. Now, the reason I read that is because you have to understand the frontline supervisor is more times than not at a disadvantage. And I'm not here promoting anything at all about frontline supervisors. They chose the job, learn it. But they stay at a disadvantage because they don't get classes on what I'm about to teach or what Rob and I are going to go over tonight. This is stuff they find out. Again, as we call it, through the school of hard knocks. And how unfortunate if you're the individual who's hurt while that new supervisor or that uninformed supervisor now has to learn what to do while you suffer. No, we're going to stay two steps ahead of that game. I'm going to read to you again, I'm going to read to you the vision statement. Again, I'm in chapter 8 of the Elm. The Postal Service will become a leader in occupational safety and health for the federal government and private sector by demonstrating a commitment to integrating safe work practices into all of our services. The Postal Service is committed to participation in the OSHA, OSHA Voluntary Protection Program. The Postal Service also engages in innovative safety efforts such as the Ergonomics Program and Joint Labor Management Safety and Health Committee. Now, again, I'm sure most of you know, I don't think we still have the ergonomics program, but if one were interested, I'm thinking the Elm says we're still supposed to have that. When we talk about the guiding principles of the Postal Service, some of their guiding principles are people. Employees are our most vital resource. Our employees must be provided a safe and healthful workplace. The customer. When our employees work more safely, our performance improves. Excellence, integrity, and community responsibility. Now, again, I'm just laying down some rules and regulations that govern the Postal Service, so I'm trying to disband any thoughts of any employee thinking that the law says the Post Office does not have to provide you injury compensation. A safety philosophy. The safety philosophy of the Postal Service is listed as any occupational injury or illness that can be prevented. The goal is realistic, not theatrical. Supervisors and managers have primary responsibility for the well-being of employees and must, not maybe, and must fully accept this principle. Now, the reason I read that with such vigor is the supervisor, that frontline supervisor, has a responsibility to ensuring a safe work environment for you. And if that doesn't occur, then we're going to talk about what responsibilities they have to ensuring that you're provided medical treatment. So right off the bat, I want you to understand that the Post Office has a vision statement that says they're going to be leaders in occupational safety and health. Their safety philosophy states that supervisors and managers have primary responsibility. They can't shake that off. They can't delegate that. They own that. And when they don't live up to that, there are consequences for their actions. Now, on the last podcast we spoke, we ventured into a declination statement. And with that declination statement, we talked about how the Postal Service if you have an accident, allows you, or will actually invite you, encourages you to sign a statement that says you've been injured, but no medical treatment is requested. Well, they've got that worded properly so that, you know, the words don't insinuate that you're giving up any of your rights, because that's illegal. And any statement that even suggests an employee gives up any injury compensation rights is an invalid statement, an invalid document. So when we start talking about reporting and investigation, now, I'm sorry, still staying with that declination statement. One of the things that declination statement does for the post office, and again, I know this is an injury comp podcast, but I'm going to touch on fair reporting, which I think the Postal Service is kind of allergic to. They're allergic to reporting actual mail volumes. They're allergic to reporting actual injuries. They're allergic to doing most of the stuff that they should be doing. So what I mean by that is, when you have an accident, there's a log called an OSHA log form 300, and an OSHA 300A, and an OSHA 301. Now, let me tell you, we're talking OSHA, we're talking federal law. So when you fill out that declination statement, what happens in real world is the post office now do not have to post that accident on that work-related injury or illness log. So again, we've come up with another way. I'm sorry. They've come up with another way to bypass a federal system and sometimes cheat you out of injury compensation rights that you are actually due. So again, we talk about those reporting logs. That declination statement that they have you sign allows them to bypass that log. So when OSHA comes in to do a audit, it looks like they're working accident free. And you and I both know that is not the case. So again, knowledge being power. If you understand that, maybe you'll push to have that CA1 done, and we get the proper accident numbers reported on that the 300, 301, and 300 alpha log, so that if the government, the agencies, if OSHA comes in and inspects the Postal Service, they see the number of accidents, and then maybe they can hold them accountable for ensuring you get proper care. So again, I started the podcast off tonight coming out of Chapter 8 of the Elm, because I want you to understand the commitment the Postal Service has to you as an employee to ensure a safe workplace. And if that workplace is violated, then there are actions and courses of actions of federal law allows us to partake in. Okay, moving right out of Chapter 8, we're going to come right into Chapter 5. And again, this podcast is based out of the Employee Labor Relations Manual, a.k.a. the ELM. When I come right into Chapter 5, over to 540, Injury Compensation Program, 540.1, under the provisions of Postal Reorganization Act 39, USC 1005, all employees of the United States Postal Service are covered by the Federal Employees Compensation Act, FECA. So, again, and FECA laws have been around to protect us. Again, we have the same injury compensation rights as your congressmen and your senators have. They're covered under FECA also. And again, if you look in your ELM, you'll see a litany of CA forms from CA1 down to CA35H. and it goes on to a couple of Postal Service forms. But when we start talking FECA, now we come back into the heart and soul of what our podcast is about, and we start talking about injury compensation and rules and regulations that govern such. We talked about the CA1. And again, I'm no stranger to repetition of information. I am more than aware that sometimes when we hear it the first time, it may not sink in. So you're going to hear a lot of information. I'm sorry. Go ahead, Ralph.
I didn't say anything. But yeah, I agree. You're going to hear us say a lot of information, give you a lot of information, and then repeat it. Not because we're trying to bore you to death, but because it's important that you understand it.
It's very important that you understand it. Again, there's nothing better than knowing that you know the right way to do something. You know, we used to say this, I guess a lot of postal people and a lot of union people, for that matter, used to say, practice makes perfect. Well, after 38 years in a post office, let me tell you something, folks. Practice don't make perfect. Perfect practice makes perfect. Because way more often than I care to mention, do you see some 35-year in-the-service employee performing an act wrong, but he did it wrong 34 years ago, no one corrected him, and he has convinced himself, he or she, that it is the right way to do things. And let me give you one or two examples before we start getting into the matter of some of these CA forms. Now, when I spoke to you about Chapter 8 in Health and Safety Environment, OSHA rules and regulations, I said to you that the post office is innovative and they are leaders in safe work environments. What I want to say to you, a lot of times, or in fact, more times than not, they are. We as employees, in a lot of cases, fail to follow their rules and regulations. And one comes to mind right off the top of my head, and I got to state this. Employees working on the dock. How many of you, and I know that everyone should have been trained. If not, I'm giving it to you now. How many of you are aware that if you are not pulling equipment with a piece of pit motorized equipment to pull it, that you are only allowed, authorized to pull one piece at a time? If you do not have a piece of pit equipment, you are not authorized to hook three APCs together and pull them across the post office. Not clerk, not carrier, not anybody. Go ahead, sir.
They're not allowed to pull it, period. They have to push it. That's the rules. That's OSHA's requirement.
Ah, push,
they're
don't pull.
Not allowed to pull.
Not a thank you. You know, that's even more traumatic when you're pulling three pieces of equipment. Because let me tell you something. If the rules and regulations state push, don't pull, you got to understand something. The Postal Service, far back as I can remember, is a career. So, and now I'm giving somewhat of a half kudo to upper management. When I say upper, I'm talking headquarters level, because the rules and regulations they send down are in line with federal policies. Now, they do a real poor job of checking for compliance, or possibly they don't care about compliance. Sometimes they just care that I told you to do the right thing, and if you do the wrong thing and no one gets hurt, then we'll act like it never happened. But no, employees, listen, stop pulling any equipment. Because let me tell you something, you catch the right supervisor on the wrong day and what you think is going above and beyond, you get injured pulling three APCs across the floor, workroom floor. Let me tell you something. Columbus Postal Management is probably going to find you at fault with that accident, and then your whole emotions are going to spiral out of control because you're going to be convinced, here I am trying to do a good job for the company. I got hurt, and they blame me. Well, you know what? And listen to me very carefully. You should be blamed. You know you should only pull one. So what happens is, and I hate to take injury comp and spill it over into our F1 scheduler, but if you continue to try to do the work of two or three people, again, not naturally, here's what happens. You risk injury to yourself, and you also risk losing additional mail handler jobs because you want to violate, and Postal Management is going to let you violate, again, as long as you're not filing claims on them. So again, push, don't pull. And let me tell you, during the Christmas holiday, there was a lot of people pulling mail out to the docks for dispatch. But again, I'm going to walk out on a limb and say Local 304 union activity was probably dormant during this period of time. Why? Because they are used to seeing that. So my point to you now is, if the law says, the federal law says, and you hear this in indoctrination, because when I was an active president, I would always sit in the orientations. I'm sorry, I said indoctrination, but I meant orientation. I would always sit in the orientation, and I would hear George, the safety individual, tell employees that you could only push, one piece of equipment at a time. But yet, every time I go on the dock, I see employees pull. And again, I stop and remind them, hey, listen, you know that's an unsafe act. Now, to some, it may look like Ken Haas is just trying to stir the pot up. No, what Ken Haas is trying to do is get you to work safe so that you can work 30 years in the Postal Service without being broken up. Because eventually, that's going to take a toll on your body. And you have no one but yourself to blame because you willingly failed to work safe. Now, let's take this and roll this up just a little faster. Let's say we are working safe and we get injured. Now, there's a thing in here that I want to read out of the Elm, and it's in chapter 5 under FICA claim requirements. Now, 542.3 deals with the penalties for false statements. Any employee, supervisor, or representative who knowingly makes a false statement with respect to a claim under FICA may be subject to a fine of not more than $10,000 or 5 years in prison or both. Okay, that's a statement. Any employee, supervisor, representative who, with respect to FICA claims, enter into any agreement to obtain the payment of allowances or any false or fraudulent claim. Again, $10,000, 10 years in prison or both. 542.33, penalty for refusal to process a claim. Any employee or supervisor responsible for making reports in connection with the injury who willfully fails, neglects, or refuses to do so. Now, I'm going to stop right there. When we talk about willfully fails, neglects, or refuses to do so, Rob always tells us about the time limits on these forms. He also lets us know when you fill out that CA1, get your signed copy back. Because once you have that and your claim isn't processed within these time limits, then we can go back and look to see where we missed these time limits. And if we miss time limits on your claim because the supervisor was uneducated with respect to the proper sequence of events that must follow for filing claims, then that supervisor is considered the person refusal to process this claim. So, again, you have time limits on things that you have to get filed. And if you follow the guidance that we provide with you, provide for you, you will always stay ahead of the power curve. And let me continue reading that. So, again, if they fail to make that report, negligent or refusal induces, compels, or directs an injured employee to forego filing a claim. Now, again, we want to read that for better understanding, because when I talk about induces, compels, or directs an employee to forego filing a claim, or willfully retains any notice, report, or paper required in conjunction with an injury, may be subject to a fine of not more than $500 or 1 year in prison or both. Now, if that don't give you some sense of satisfaction that they have to file these claims expeditiously and promptly, then I don't know what will. And again, I'm reading from their labor relations manual. So again, my point with reading that is to let you know, if you understand your rules, your rights and regulations, if the Postal Service does not live up to their end, there are consequences that we can hold them accountable for. One more thing I want to read, and then I'm going to turn this mic over to Rob for a minute. Waiver of compensation rights. Here we go. We're talking 543. Now, this comes real close to what the Postal Service calls their declination statement. No employer or other person may require an employee or other claimant to enter into any agreement, either before or after an injury or death, to waive his or her right to claim compensation under FICA. No waiver of compensation rights shall be valid. Now, again, I've never had to pull the post office on the carpet over that declination statement, but I can kind of see it coming to fruition. So, again, hey, Rob, are you familiar with that declination statement that they do?
Yes, I am. I've had to fill one out. Actually, every time you're injured, they ask you to fill one out. Don't have to.
Right.
All right. And in fact, I recommend that you don't, but, you know.
And again, notice that key word here, recommend. We don't, and let me just reiterate to the podcast listeners, we provide information and we will provide guidance. Again, because you do or do not do the guidance use the information that we give you. I mean, that does not make Robert or myself a responsible party. What we're trying to do is make sure you're armed with your rights so that, again, nobody's going to fight for your compensation rights like the person that's injured. Because other people may let your claim sit on their desk while you're missing paychecks. So if we give you the tools in which to arm yourself with, in this case, we're talking CA1, CA2s, CA7, CA16, CA20s, some references out of the Employee Labor Relations Manual, and now you're armed to go into battle and come out victorious. And I hate to use the military metaphor, but it was comfortable for me. And so what's been hot, Rob? Talk to me about what some of the things we really want to focus on to our listeners.
Well, going back to the declination statement, you as an employee, an injured employee, have the right to refuse to go to the doctor when you're injured. All right. In fact, the post office wants you to refuse. That way they don't have to do anything. I made that mistake when I injured myself back in March of 2016. When I first injured myself that day, it felt like I might have sprained a muscle or something, and I kept working for about 2.5 hours after I reported my injury. And then it got to the point where I couldn't use my arm anymore. It hurt that badly. And I went to my supervisor and said, I really need to go to the emergency room. This was a more serious injury than I thought. And believe me, for the next 3 days, I heard over and over again, you signed a declination statement. Well, my declination statement was I didn't want to go to the doctor right then. Not that I'm giving up the right to go, because I didn't know how seriously I was hurt. As it turns out, I had 6 tears in my rotator cuff. It's a more serious injury than I thought.
Hey, we got a new caller. How you doing, new caller?
Hi, it's Jeannie and Chris. How are you guys doing? Merry Christmas.
Okay, we appreciate you coming in there, Jeannie and Chris. Hey, we just did a quick 30-minute Christmas podcast tonight. I just kind of brought the employees up on some of their rules, some of their rights with respect to postal rules and regulations, and then next Tuesday we're going to go right back into compensation and FICA laws. But I wanted to ensure our postal employees using manuals that every manager has to let them know that the management has a right to provide a safe workplace, and when they don't, there are consequences for their lack of action.
Correct.
Hey,
correct.
Yes. But that brings our 30-minute podcast to a close this evening. Happy holidays to everyone. And I hope that this festive time of year can linger on into maybe every day next year. I'm just reaching out there. But happy holidays to you. Hey, from Hodge to Hodge Podcast, we're signing off saying be safe at work. But if for whatever reason you are involved in an at-work injury, illness, or an accident, understand that you have rights. And if you stay tuned to the podcast, we will make sure you're informed of your rights so that you can receive proper injury compensation. So I'm saying good night. And hey, Cass, everybody gets your good nights in, and we're going to sign off. Rob, can I get a good night, Rob?
Oh, I'm sorry. There's some background noise. I couldn't hear you.
I'm okay.
Sorry. Please keep in mind also that anything that Kenny and I tell you, we're not ordering you to do it. We cannot force you to do it. This all has to be done by you. We will just provide you with the information on how to do it so that you get covered.
And with that, good night, all. Let's have a safe day at work every day. Good night.